Okay, let's record and record. Okay, we got two things recording at the same time, which is the cell phone and then the microphone up there. So, the microphone is way that far away, but the cell phone is close to me. I think I put the cell phone a little closer to the rest of us so we can sort of hear each other and not just one being dominant. So, welcome to the Reskilling Reusing class, March 2017 at the Portland Library. What is it? Tuesday, March something, the last one. Yeah. And as always, free to the public, free for anybody who wants to come. Pretty much have to be a human being, though. Pets are optional. You have to go through management. In order to get things off, I want to start off with a song I haven't sung for a long time. And my guitar is getting... My guitar is in tune, but my fingertips are getting really lax because I haven't been playing as much as I used to, and so they're not calloused. So I got to do this for my own sake, if not for anybody else. But it is springtime. We're going to be doing this, which is homegrown tomatoes. And if anybody wants to join in, they sure can. The lyrics are right here. There ain't nothing in the world that I like better than tofu and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them all summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all of my sweating and digging every time I go out and get me a big and homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes. What'll I be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things the money can't buy. Not true love and homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, that's for sure. But there's nothing that a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them on a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your own berry on tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs. You can eat them with gravy. You can eat them with beans, since they were navy. Put them on the side, put them on the middle, homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle, homegrown tomato, what'll I be with a homegrown tomato, only two things a mother can't buy, and that you love in homegrown tomatoes. If I had to change this life I lead, you can call me Johnny Tomato Seed, cause I know what this country needs is homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cold, dark cemetery. Out in the garden would be much better, cause I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes. That's cool. Okay, we're done with that word. Homegrown tomato song. Actually, there are other aspects to it which would make that song go on forever and ever, because there's a dance part in the middle, and then there's a solo, and there's all other kind of stuff, but we want to keep it short because, you know, it's kind of semi-audio, and it's kind of in the middle of the day. If it's late at night, then there will be some wildness going on with tambourines and everything. But as it is, we don't have that. So I just wanted to bring up the idea of food, because, you know, it's springtime, and it's homegrown tomatoes that we just played. And what does that have to do with reskilling and reusing? Obviously, gardening is a reskill. It's like, okay, let's do it. And if you want to reuse your body, you just bury yourself in the backyard and you could push up tomatoes. I guess that's fine, too. Another reuse. Never thought about that. But I think there is a whole other thing we could go on, which is like natural graveyards and all kinds of stuff. But we're not going there because, you know, it's kind of a one-time thing. And this reskilling, reusing event that we're doing, we want to look at things that we can do over and over again, not just like die once and then be awesome reuse, but, you know, reuse all the time. So I went to Kroger and I pulled up a bag of onions, and I wanted to see if there was any onions in the dollar off, you know, the half-baked ones that are cheaper, and there wasn't. So I went and looked at the regular priced ones because I really like onions, not just tomatoes, but onions. And there was. I found a really lousy looking onion, and I told the guy who said hi to me, because he thinks I'm weird. And then he said to me, when I told him, hey, this one's got a little bit of a little rotten part in it. Could I get this half off? Like it should be over there at the half-used ones. And they said, yep, sure, that's fine. So I got a bag, and then there were some other ones that he had too. He stuffed those in there too. So I got a lot of onions that have a couple blemishes on them, and I told him to his face. I looked him in the eye, and I said, I got a knife at home. I can cut that stuff off. And so it's a perfect example of, I guess it's not really reusing because they were just going to put it into the pile for discount prices. But it's just kind of a reskilling of negotiating. When something's full price, no, you can just find some blemish on it and ask for a price reduction and you can get it. So that's the reskilling aspect of that with a little bit of kind of a approach towards getting things cheap and getting things that are imperfect, but yet they're perfectly acceptable. So let's see. So we talked about tomatoes, we talked about onions, and then if you don't mind, well, just want to say welcome, John.
Well, thank you.
You don't have to tell. You don't have to tell your last name, of course, because you know it could be that you want to keep a low profile. People are using a low profile these days. I could go on about that, but I'm not.
Yeah.
So I have. I got this book from the library called "Waste: Uncovering the Global Food Scandal," and I wanted to read it and review it. And I couldn't because I just ran out of time, and it is the most aggravating thing on the planet that we don't have 24 hours a day to, I guess we do, but I just been spending time sleeping and, you know, eating and doing all kinds of silly stuff instead of, you know, doing what I really want to do, which is, you know, make the world a better place. So I have the ability to look into the index, and I skimmed right through it, which is a skill in and of itself. I said, oh yeah, got that. Then I got to his crux of what I think he's talking about, and that's where I want to share right now, and that is, and if you don't mind, we'll just go, could we just do paragraph by paragraph? I think I'll read the first paragraph, you read the second paragraph,
sure.
Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, because I don't, you know, I don't want to bore anybody. It's like, I don't want to hear it. I got to read it by myself. But it really says something. And the waste of food is what this guy is going to talk about. And that is Tristram Stewart did so in 2009. He goes like this. This book argues that the world's mountain of surplus food is currently an environmental liability, but it's also a great opportunity. There's a fantastic amount of slack in the world's food supply where efficiency measures could create enormous savings, help the fight against hunger, and guarantee food for future generations, as well as potentially feeding hungry people, salvaging food, which would help tackle global warming. More than 30% of the Europe's greenhouse gas emissions come from food production. If food waste was halved, emissions would be slashed by 5% or more. In the hypothetical scenario, if we planted trees on the land currently used to grow unnecessary surplus and wasted food, we could theoretically offset the maximum of 100% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions. And unlike most environmental measures, reducing food waste has minimal negative consequences. It is not like the tough dilemmas of whether to forego car or airplane travel or giving up eating so much meat. We can help reduce our impact on the planet and improve our lives of the world's poor just by using food instead of throwing it away. Once food has been discarded, it creates another environmental problem of its own. In many countries throughout the developed world, organic waste is buried in landfill sites where it decomposes into toxic effluent and methane. Oops, I forgot. One second. So just read methane. You see the word methane?
Methane is a greenhouse gas 21 times more potent than carbon dioxide. Some developed nations are running out of space to bury their rubbish. In South Korea and Taiwan, sending food to a landfill is already banned, and it is only a matter of time before other countries will have to do the same. As these countries are learning, the very concept of waste has to be redefined. Even when unfit for human consumption, food waste is a valuable resource that can be used for animal feed, power production, and fertile compost. Keep on.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
It was a good reminder because I think pretty much everybody who goes through elementary school now these days has got an idea that food is useful. I think that's what my kids said, that they got a little bit of a clue, but they only heard it once from the teacher and that was it. And then there was like no challenge. And so that's what you hear doing too. You're hearing an audio file saying, you know, you ought to be mindful too, but no challenge.
I'm assuming if you throw away food waste and it goes to the landfill, it's getting composted. But as that said, not necessarily.
well, and these are thoughtful conversations that are useful to have, and we could go on about that, and but maybe we just call Yarmouth in here and have him a chat about it, because what are we going to do without, well, we can just change our own lives, but we also can have a larger thing. And then I guess the whole idea of what we're doing with the reskilling, reusing, is to challenge the mayor's challenge, which is to reduce our garbage volume by 90% in a few years or so. So in order to do that, we're going to have to start with food, and there you go. Now there's a lot of opportunity for food to be saved, and it's just ridiculous. And we could start in, but we would never end. That's why we go on to the next topic, which is, I don't know. You got an idea, John? You want to talk about? You see anything on the table here? All kinds of weird stuff that you would like to just share with anybody about how to reuse or reskill in terms of
stuff here. Yeah. You gotta. Gem, which has many uses.
Okay, well, there it is. Okay, so go ahead and talk to us.
Shim's like a wedge, probably starts out an eighth of an inch and goes up to about 3/8 of an inch. And if you have a window that's really rattly, an old wooden one or something, you could put a shim in there and keep it from jumping around so much.
Where do you get those shims?
You get these at the hardware store. And they're made out of wood mostly, so.
And I've seen some that are made out of plastic. You can get some, but wood obviously is the best. Yeah, sure, for sure.
Toilet shims that are plastic, so. And that makes sense.
Oh, where does that go in the toilet?
Underneath, if you need to level the toilet a little bit when you're installing it, they actually make a thing called a toilet shim.
Oh, wow. You know, I'm learning this stuff. Mm-hmm.
I did when I had to get mine into level.
Oh, okay. And then you shim it, and then you caulk around it?
Oh, you can, yeah.
Yeah, otherwise there's a hole there. Yeah. Okay, exactly. That's cool. Okay. And then how about another thing? Anything else catches your fancy?
Oh, here's some plumbing strap, plastic plumbing strap. Gosh.
It's like a ribbon with holes in it, and it's
sure is.
pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it's been used already.
It has been. I can see where screws have been through and stuff. A lot of people will hold up piping with this, like down in the basement where it's exposed. I don't know. It could be quite a handy thing to have.
Well, there's a lot of things that rattle around, and you can know that there's these little plastic straps that can be purchased at the store. And then once you purchase it and use a little bit that you need to, then you can put the rest away.
Yeah.
Into like some place of like a workbench storage area.
Something, yeah.
Now, do you have any philosophy about work storage area, where tools should go and how they should be organized? The tools themselves and then the supplies, like what we're just talking about here, this strapping, that's a supply.
I'm still working on my organizational fashion as far as storing tools and things like that, but I'd probably put that in a plumbing section, which might be a couple of old milk crates or boxes that have plumbing-related things in them.
Well, and of course you could go and spend $100 on a perfectly beautiful organizational apparatus in order to make everything cool, but you don't need to buy a lot of stuff. You just need to have a belief in your heart of wanting to organize, and then a commitment to spend the time organizing and then putting the tools back where you have organized them to.
And that's what I try to do, make a mantra be, like things together. At least for my mind, that helps. And actually, I did find a bunch of milk crates in the alley recently, so, yeah.
Now, I happened to find a door. I just put the door on on a stand, and then that's a huge table, and
sure.
then instead of milk crates, because milk crates, you have to look in, I just, from afar, can see where all the tools are, and to put, there's about 12 different sections on the table of all different tools, and I just kind of lay them. Now, I could put a second row and a third row. Maybe I'll think about that. But, you know.
It's good to be able to see them, too. Milk crates going in and out of the trucks, good for, like, extension cords or saws or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, speaking of extension cords, I just wanted to let you know that I was thinking about how fast and easy it is to take an extension cord and rip it between your wrist and your elbow, and you twist it up into a group of like a lasso, and then you twist around it and then put the cords together. And I just didn't really know how to do that until kind of later in life, and I just I wish we could demonstrate that, but I just think that is fantastic. Now, I was just doing that with Cat 5 cord, which is internet cord, and was not able to do that because it doesn't twist very well, and I found three massive problems. So when I twist it then and put it into a lasso, I do it in a loop, and then I do it, and then I twist my wrist the opposite way and make another loop, and then I twist it forward with my wrist, and then I another loop with my twisting backwards in the hand, so that therefore it only twists one half and then it comes back, rather than keeping on twisting and twisting and twisting until the whole thing is so twisted up that it just gets tight into this weird contorted noose kind of a looking thing. So I learned that when I was doing the sound cordage, sound cords and electronics and all that stuff. They don't really twist that much. They just don't forgive too much. So there's either the extension cords which can twist or the electronics that don't. There's a couple techniques for organizing again, which is just putting your things and strapping them up just like you would a lot of different things. Strap up, organize, stuff like that. Let's see. I got another thing that I want to share, which is this, there. John, you know what that is?
Looks like sidewalk chalk.
Yep, that sure is sidewalk chalk.
Yeah.
Yep, and you can get an entire bucket of that. Just a large, like, 5-quart ice cream bucket. Mm-hmm. Just tons of those. I think you can get them at the dollar store or maybe Walmart for dirt cheap. So they're really kind of fun. And then you have just a lot of different colors and a lot of different chalk. Now, I've seen some chalk pictures that are really beautiful, but yet there's also a technique that chalk can be used for, and I want to indulge myself by expressing my recent application to the Portland Anchor newspaper, and I sent an article about what we could do with chalk. And you mind if I read it?
Do it.
Okay, it hasn't been published. I hope it's going to be published.
Not even hot off the press yet.
I know, this is there's something to be said there. So, okay, the title is Let's Talk Chalk Walk. And here it is. It says, maybe you've never been on a sports team when the coach gives a chalk talk before the game to strategize and win the game. Well, I have. And I think Portland should give itself a chalk talk. Hear, hear. My ramrod, mercurial, and otherwise incendiary idea is to take a piece of the trending thick colored chalk and then rubber band it to the end of a stick and drag it behind you as you walk the streets while going about your business around the neighborhood. Will people see this? Yes. And what will they think? They will think you are showing you care about the community and the people in it, and that you are drawing a line in the sand as an indication whether you've got backbone and are tough as nails no matter what zip code the vampire bully may come from. If you aren't giving up on world peace, no matter what, put down a line. If you happen to be a bondage sex worker, put down a line. If you happen to be to want better schools, put down a line on that sidewalk. Soup to nuts, draw the line. This is your voice. It's not Facebook, so you can't be traced. You can't be trolled or tracked. In the months to come, if you're curious about how the lines in the sand are doing, won't we be entreating some local aerial drone operators to assess the neighborhood-wide status of our self-chalk talk. With a wider brush, this is not about self-expression nor civil disobedience. While these do have play, it's more about developing a hyper-local, solidarity-seeking community hive mind that spans gender, nationality, and even species. We could put travois on the bigger dogs. If you have a pedometer, you can scribble down the step count at the beginning, end, and every thousandth step of your walk. If a walk and chalk around the block is enough to get you up and at 'em in the morning, well, then that's a good thing. Walking's healthy. Not sure how to jog and lay chalk. Got a low inventory? I think I've seen an entire bucket of chalk for sale for cheap, maybe at a dollar store. When researching this visionary community activity, I espied Google Images photos of sidewalk art that is unbelievably stellar, and do recall it being done at the Sustainability Fair at the U of L last fall. I forgot the image drawn on the common sidewalk at the U of L, though, probably some unicorn with solar panels or whatnot. For those environmentally concerned, chalk will wash off with water and add calcium to the soil. And for those who want to generally develop a hive mind, chalk doesn't use as many resources as, say, purchasing a dual-pointed pink hat, a button or a t-shirt or an armband or a yard sign. If you ever run into someone chalking up on the sidewalk, we're allowed to bro hug in solidarity with no strings or stigma attached. I'm not sure this idea or challenge is ever going to go away. Maybe if this activity becomes a felony, then this challenge will go away so to avoid conviction of colluding and encouraging to commit a felonious act. And please don't put marks on the road that would steer drivers onto the curbing, because our nearby drivers are quite challenged enough to stay on the road as it is without adding a faux veering stripes. I would encourage the scribbling of a cobra onto the road with the words "tread on me" in front of the pedestrian entrance to the K&I bridge. But if in conference with law enforcement it becomes evident that this is treasonous, then I'll order a retraction in the next issue. Back to channeling positive karma. Shall we meet in hyperspace to discuss the status and strategy? Correlatedly, how do we chalk up the internet? Use your favorite social media with the moniker hashtag Portland Chalk Talk Walk. That's it. Okay. Well, some people may read it.
Yeah.
If they decided to publish it, but it does say the word treason in there, so maybe they won't even publish it. You never know these days. So that's cool. I write this stuff and it just kind of flows and there you go. It doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't have to have a good spunk or structure. It just kind of is what it is. But it only goes to show that chalk can be useful. I think I did mention once in a Portland Anchor article that you can put chalk notes on the tennis court saying, "Hey, Mondays at 6 o'clock, we're going to have tennis, you know, here and meet up there." And that's an opportunity, because you'd never really know. There's no card. There's no cork board to put any of the announcement like that up there. So chalk is a tool. Social media is a tool, but I think it just gets washed away. They're just different, I guess. One is physical and one is cyber. Now the thing I want to say about physical notes and things like that is that I did mention, and I have thought about how awesome it was that there's cork boards around the neighborhood that we can put up some interesting stuff if we ever want to. Like, for instance, at Save-A-Lot, there is. And then also at, what is the place called? The Table. Now, do you know of any other around town? Does Kroger have one? I've never seen one at Kroger.
I've never looked for one at Kroger, but
no, it's got to kind of be at the entrance. You know, that's where it is, at the Table and Save-A-Lot. And Kroger could do that if they wanted. I know they do it at the other Krogers, but maybe needs not just this Portland one as what needs to have something. But it also has to have, like, cool stuff, too. Right. You know, I like cork boards that I'm going to actually stop at, like, the ones at the Table were pretty interesting. It had one about the co-op, and it had, some other, Louisville Grows, local community garden stuff, and that was just the ones that I happened to be by there. Save-A-Lot one, I think is more like, how to get free phones and a credit card and all that kind of stuff.
Yard mowing service or something.
Yeah. Well, the yard mowing service has relevance. But the other stuff can be almost scams, or can be someone just trying to make a buck. Not that I'm saying that make a buck is bad, but there's different ways to do it, which is, one is life neighborhood affirming. Another one is just sort of, doing the same old thing, which we don't need more of. I don't have enough vocabulary to even go on about that, but the chalk did bring my mind up to the whole idea of cork boards. And I did talk to the library about it. I said, "Library, can you put up a cork board?" And I think they said no. I think that's what happened. Not sure what happened there, but you know, at least you can ask the question wherever you have the opportunity to ask questions, I guess. Let's see. So here's my nemesis that I've brought from home, which is shoe goo. And it has every opportunity to be used because I have shoes that have various holes in them. And I have a tendency to go to Walmart and just buy new shoes rather than fixing up the existing ones. And I think the challenge to me is to learn how to fix up shoes rather than to always have to go get other ones. The other challenge would be to just make shoes out of wood, make shoes out of rubber tires, right? Mm-hmm. I think we've maybe mentioned that in the past. But and then you could use shoe goo, I guess, to put it together. I don't know. But it does, it's my little nemesis right there. The other idea, I guess, is to just buy really, really, really expensive shoes. I guess they're supposed to last longer, but I don't know the ratio between cost of shoes versus how long they last, versus if you can just jimmy them up as it is and get some super functional shoes for almost no price. So as a reskilling, reusing, I just have to say I'm working on it, but I'm not arrived yet, and I want to arrive. Let's see. This is stuff that I purchased, and it is a Spokes reflector. I think I purchased it, or maybe I got it as a gift. But it's a super reflective, and it just pops right on the spoke. So you just pop it right on the spoke, and then your car light flashes, and you can see that you're there.
Good to be visible.
Yeah. I mean, especially in the wintertime, if you're biking, it's almost always dark when you're doing it. So that's good. In the summertime, I guess you can be really late at night, but tend not to so much. So I'm not really worried about it now because there's so much light during the day now, or in the evenings, that I might get around to it. I did have a bicycle that the back tire spokes broke, and so now it wobbles badly. So I went to Craigslist to see if I could buy a hub in the tire, back wheel, and I couldn't see anything. Well, there is a difference between a wheel, a tire, and a inner tube. So the inner tube is the really wimpy inside, which is kind of more like a inner tube, is really soft rubber. And then the outside of that is the rubber tire that touches the road. But the metal part is the wheel. And the wheel then has a rim, and then it has the spokes, and then it has a hub in the middle of it. And then I guess there's an axle which is run on ball bearings, which has lots of grease in them, which makes the wheel go, even though the axle stays still, but the wheel rolls around it. So if you ever run into a bicycle and you see it on the side of the road, just take it home with you and then rip apart the axle just to see all those. Or you go to YouTube, I guess, these days. Just go to YouTube, figure out how wheel ball bearings work. Or maybe they don't do ball bearings anymore. I'm not sure. They used to. I have yet to go to a bicycle class. I just sort of bike around. I don't know how to repack my ball bearings. Yeah. I suppose they would be more efficient, but then again, me, I just run my bicycle so hard that the spokes break. And after I broke the spokes, then I went and went on Craigslist, bought a new bike, and I he was way out far away, so I just told him, I said, I had to pay a little money to get out here, so can I take $5 off the price you're asking? And they said, sure. So that comes down to the art of the deal, which is to go ahead and feel free to negotiate prices and do it appropriately, but you certainly can do that, and people naturally would tend to give prices that are a little bit higher than what they are thinking that it might go for, and then you come with a price that's lower than that they were thinking is going to, and then you can end up where you were going to eventually going to all meet anywhere anyway to do that. I never learned that until I went to Mexico. And they charged lots, and I was told that you got to just negotiate any price because they want the dollars no matter how much. And I found that to be the case. So I was able to negotiate some really cheap, t-shirts or something I was buying. And then they would look at me and said, as I was walking out the door, Americanos. Just like, oh, I guess that's what it is. So the bicycle then is gonna, I found out is a rod, there's a different diameter. So now I'm gonna have a bicycle that has a 27 inch front wheel, but the back wheel, which is gonna be replaced, is 26 inch. So it's gonna be like smaller. Now the brakes won't line up anymore because the brakes are for a 27 inch, not a 26 inch diameter bicycle tire. And therefore, my back brakes won't work. I'll just have to loosen them up, expand them out, and let the back tire just go free. And I'll just have my brakes in my front brakes until I go get around to buying another 27-inch bicycle tire for, I don't know, $250, $50. I mean, it's like, it was crazy. Maybe I'll have to just look around various garage sales for a 27-inch back tire or just bike and then just buy the whole thing, kind of like what I did with this 26 incher. So as you can see, biking becomes kind of an interesting aspect. If you want to do it every day and something falls down, you're going to buy a brand new bike from Walmart for $78 or you're going to, you know, try to do something fun, because I certainly could do that. But you know, buying something from Taiwan is just a lot less appetizing for me than buying something from Craigslist. And you know, the person that was on the that was there was, I think it's from like some Eastern Asian country and spoke with a strong accent. So I was thinking, what kind of story there is there? How fun is that? You know, you just sort of, you never, from Craigslist, you just make the deal with anybody who's there. And that's neat. And so now I got a bike for what it's worth. So let's see now. We were meandering from A to Z, and now we're over to Z. And welcome anybody who's come, who just arrived, and there's been a lot that's gone on, and you can listen to it later on. Of course, I just want to use this as an opportunity to say that the reskilling, reusing event is going to be posted up at metajenny.com/reskill, and then you'll see the blog there, and then you just go to what month you want, pop, pop, pop. And you can get it. Then what happened this last month was that I somehow was not able to convert the file from my cell phone, which is .amr, convert it over to .mp3. So I wanted an mp3 file because that's what most people use, but somehow I wasn't able to do that, and I could spend a lot of time, but I haven't for months and months, and then I couldn't. So I converted it over to an mp4 class. File, and if you know about an MP4 file, that's a video file. And so I did the conversion, and then it only works on VLC, which is, you know, video LAN. What happened is that there's this software that some Swedish 16-year-old 30 years ago figured out how to just show DVDs on their computer. And it had never been done before, and they did it, and so that was where it all began. And then obviously the other companies, you know, like the big ones, had to follow along. But VLC is the software that the file can run on, but I'm going to redouble my efforts, and I have the files, and maybe I'll turn it into an MP3 that's not 83 megabyte video file, which is ridiculous. It's got to be just a nice little MP3 that's about 20 megabytes. Now the .amr file that comes right off the cell phone is about 8 megabytes. So it's about 90 minutes in 9 megabytes. That's really efficient as far as file size is concerned. So I only mention this because, yeah, we can reskill about chalk and shoes and stuff, but we also can skill ourselves about what to do electronically, because without a voice, those that have voices are going to drown us out. But if we take the time to say, how do we get our voices out, whatever that is, then you're probably going to run into the .amr file versus .mp3 scenarios. So I just bring that up just because I like to. Now, because you yawned, I have to change topic. Okay, so thanks for the yawn. I just wanted to share with you that walking through a place that's about to get abandoned, you can start taking stuff off. It's illegal, and don't ever say you heard it from here. But like, for instance, this right here, it's like a coat hanger, and it is screwed into the wall like wood. It wouldn't screw into plaster or drywall very well. But it's back in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s. It's a coat hanger into a door. You just screw it right in, and there you got a coat rack, coat hanger right there. So if you know that the place is going to get demolished or unused for whatever reason, you could just unscrew it and then just use it for yourself. So we were talking earlier about organization, and of course, any hooks you can find are totally relevant, and this would be one of them for sure. So if you don't know where to use such a hook, then you just leave it in your to-be-decided-later pile. And then you always have to ask the question,
where did I have that?
That's a loaded question.
Because that's mine, but I don't know where it came from.
Okay, well, we can discuss this if you really want to know.
Is it in the basement?
This was in the basement. Can you describe what that is and the functionalities of it and the utility of it?
It's a hose clamp, and it's used to clamp hoses.
Used to poses? It's for clamping hoses?
It's a clamp hose.
Well, what it
the
is
hose
is
clamp, like, rather.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of it's a round strap, and it's metal, and it's kind of tied in with this apparatus at the top, which has a screw in it. You tighten the screw, and it tightens the hose. The circle gets a little smaller, so you can tighten something really, really tight. So
closes up pretty tight, and you could stop a leak in a pipe with this little scrap of inner tube.
Yep.
That's the one thing would get small enough, yeah.
Yeah, keep going with that. That's
so
a great idea.
Emergency supply. So
yeah.
We put this in plumbing, too.
And if you see something that's going to be demolished, just get your screwdriver out and take that. Uh-huh. Otherwise, you could go to the store and buy one, but I think they're probably expensive these days, I would think. Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, if you get one lying on the ground, just pick it up and put it in your to-be-determined-later pile. One thing that happened to me...
I need to know where my to-be-determined pile is.
Yeah, well, there is the whole idea of way too much clutter, right? When you pick up too much stuff, and then all of a sudden, there you go. And so you have to ask tough questions yourself at all times, saying, do I need psychological help? Is this the pattern? Is this something that I, didn't get as a child, or something like that?
These things look really familiar, and I know that they are from my house, but I don't remember where they came from.
Well, one thing I can share, though, is that this last month, since the last reskilling was in late February, I did still a lot of wood cutting, because even though I had enormous amount of wood piled up, it just gets burned.
Yes.
And so I had to chop some more, and I ended up really, really cracking the axe handle. Now, this isn't that it hasn't been before, but this one was because it gets stuck really hard in there, and you can't get it out, so you pull, and you hit with another mallet thing, and then you crack the handle. So part of me was thinking, I could take one of these, what'd you call them again?
A hose clamp,
and just make that axe handle, because it isn't broken, it's just cracked. Mm-hmm. Just support it by one or two or three hose clamps, and then continue on as normal for a little while. And I was thinking, should I do that or should I do something else? So I asked the next door neighbor and they said, oh yeah, just buy it at Bargain Supply, get a new axe. And yeah, there's something to be said for that. So I, there's three things that are possibilities here. One is I did go to Bargain Supply, did get another axe. And of course that's, you know, I'm living in gravy right now. The second thing could be that I could fix the handle as is. The third thing could be that at Bargain Supply,
the axe handle for wood.
We're going to strike that from the record. Yeah, is to go to Bargain Supply, and I found for $10 there was axe handle replacements. And I didn't know if it was the right interface between my head or not, and because who knows? And so I kind of don't know what to do about that. So I might just buy it and then see if it works, and then if it doesn't, bring it back or whatnot. But anyway, so I could get maybe a new axe handle for $10 rather than spend the $30 for a brand new axe, but a much better axe than before because it's not made out of wood. It's made out of really hard plastic, which will last a lot longer. I guess it depends upon the type of wood too, because if it's oak wood or if it's pine, it's totally different. Yeah.
I think they make them out of pine.
Is that what the hard is? You get a really hard wood, really hard. Isn't it funny how the wood these days isn't very hard? If you go and pick up an old 2x4, if you go to a house that's just about to be demolished, and you just kind of pick up a 2x4 that's laying around, they're a heavy. But if you pick up a 2x4 from Lowe's or any of the places around, it's like, oh, this is light as a feather. Because it's with the slower growth, more dense. Back in the old days, they used to chop down trees that are as big as, you know, a VW bus. And now they chop down trees that are very thin, get a couple of 2x4s off of it, and it's light as a feather. Yep. There's always to be said, if you find some nice 2x4s, keep them around. Don't throw them away and don't chop them up and burn them. Speaking of 2x4s that you find just floating around, the other day I was just biking and I saw a dumpster and in it was a bunch of 2x4s. So I just went and got my van and did a midnight requisition and was able to get a whole bunch of 2x4s. But these 2x4s were from a construction site where they deconstruction site where the 2x4s were nailed together for about 8 feet long. So I've got 2 2x4s together. So I'm trying to figure out if it's salvageable to somehow separate the 2 2x4s together, because it's very hard to figure out how you can apply those things off, apply, versus just find some use for it as a 4x4. Because 2 2x4s are a 4x4.
Right.
And I haven't figured that out yet. That's just like a February requisition thing, and I'll wait till it's April before I get some sunlight in the evening and I can attack the thing. Any suggestions as far as basic carpentry techniques in terms of where did those come from? You know, why are they stuck together? And then how would you possibly take them apart?
Maybe in the corner of the wall or something, two corners came together and you could crowbar them apart or get a metal blade for a sawzall and sawzall them apart.
I had one of those.
Those are really...
Right.
What?
Sawzall with the right blade, you could cut the nails.
So that would be a metal cutting blade then?
Yeah.
Just cut right through. And is there anything...
Pry it a little bit so you can get the blade in. Once you get started, and then pry. And, yeah.
And it'll be for a use where you don't care that there's a residual nail in there,
yeah.
Which is perfectly fine. I don't think most... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, those are interesting ideas. Yep.
Well, you didn't say reuse them. You just said pry them, get them apart. Cut them apart.
In terms of using a sawzall, they're not that expensive and they can be used for an eternity. All you need is electricity, 110 volts, done. So what about the teeth? When you're cutting through metal, That's different than like cutting through wood. A blade can cut through wood until cows come home. But cutting through metal, like nails, like that, is there anything that we need to keep in mind? Do you want to articulate?
Metal. You need to use the right blade.
Metal blade, the teeth are closer together, and then it might be coated with something different. Maybe it has carbide on it.
Depends on the price of the blade that you buy, too, different metals. But yeah, as long as it's a metal blade, it should go through metal.
Typically,
be careful. Don't use, if you're going to cut through wood and you think there might be metal somewhere in it, don't use the wood blade in it, because if it hits metal, it's going to break.
And they make a thing called a demolition blade, which cuts wood and metal. So if you're cutting through wood and start hitting metal, then you're not going to mess up your wood-only blades.
So would you suggest that people should wait for a good sale from like Harbor Freight or something, and then just get a Sawzall for their, you know, utility uses or whatever?
Very handy if you work on houses and do yard work, because you can purchase pruning blades for them as well.
Yeah.
Now, is it something that people would, should, could, I don't know, be in kind of a good shape in order to pick up a Sawzall?
They're heavy.
They're heavy.
Yeah. They're definitely heavy. Even the lightest one you can find, which I found, and it's heavy.
Yeah, you found a light one and it's still heavy.
Yeah.
Now, so from a reskilling, reusing, I don't know, perspective, you know, how does someone stay with strong biceps so they can pick one of those things up anytime they want to, rather than just saying, oh no, I need to use it, so I got to start exercising for 3 weeks before your muscles are strong enough to pick one up? Any suggestions?
Hauling water. Hauling water. Buckets of water. Get in shape if you have any watering to do. Just put it in 2.5-gallon buckets. Instead of just using a hose or whatever, and then carry it, and you're really working those muscles.
I think every day you should carry weights around. Everywhere you go, just carry weights around. Every single day, every...
I think we're going to start chalking you up right now. That's it. We're going to chalk you up.
That's how I stay so buff. I carry weights around every day.
Well, when I think about doing that, I just think, oh, my poor back. Because it's like, it's hardest on your back, especially if you're like me, who doesn't have good posture, and then all of a sudden it's like, ah, wow. But the more you like work your back, the stronger your back gets, as long as you keep it limber.
Well,
and
if
stuff
you
like
want to get real close up and personal with your Sawzall, you just buy a Sawzall, the lightest one you can find, and then every day you pick it up. A couple of times, and you do pickups with it instead of pull-ups or push-ups. You do pickups, and then you go to the store and you buy the next size up, and then you do that, and then you finally work your way up.
You know, that almost rivals the ridiculousness of my chalk anchor article.
I was going to say, eventually you'll work your way up to a chainsaw. I'm going to listen to them next.
Well, that's good. I think we're having a real helpful conversation here.
You can go out and hang in a tree from your knees, and then you can pick the Sawzall blade up over your head.
Well, I mean, not that you aren't ridiculous, which you are, but it does bring up a point, which is that this last week I did something which I have memories of, which is I went to this place called the Gorge, and it was in, you know, the boring 2-hour ride there, right? But once you're there, you've got some ability to, I don't know, pick up a couple Sawzalls with the mountain climbing you can do there, instead of picking up Sawzalls.
That's a good way to get
strong. You can just do mountain
put
climbing.
Put yourself in a life-threatening situation and have to hang on.
Mm-hmm.
That'll make you strong real fast.
Well, we always encourage, we always want to follow the law and rules that you have, are belayed and you have a rope with you, so you don't fall like Lynn Hill. I'm reading her autobiography, and poor thing, she climbed up perfectly, and then she didn't even realize that she wasn't belayed. She forgot to tie her thing, and then she just, you know, leaned back for her husband to pay attention to her, and then she realized, I was never even belayed. I never even tied. And she fell about 40 feet, and she fell into a small tree and then hit the ground. And she had dislocated her elbow so that in the emergency hospital, they had her hold a bucket of water until the muscles were so pulled back to where they should be, and then the doctor went back, and then it was so painful, but it went back into its normal.
My grandmother did that. That's what they do in Cuba. They'll put your finger. My grandmother did that to one of my brothers. He was a kid. He dislocated his one of his fingers, and she said, "Come here," and she grabbed his finger and she pulled it, and you could hear it pop right
there.
How to do it.
I just want to say all the caveats because this is going on the internet. There's no medical advice here and all that kind of stuff. But it is interesting that rather than just randomly do it, you probably should prep the muscles and loosen them first before you go ahead and whack them. But the basic, you know, the basic idea is.
Cuban lady, she didn't think about prepping anything.
That's granny magic.
That was
about.
Granny magic for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
all the nerve neighbors heard that scream.
Yeah, no, I did have a granny magic reference here. I only have 5 pages of notes here about what's happened. There's a lot going on, and there was a reference to granny magic. Oh, yeah, it had to do with this. So, for instance, like a month or so to me, there was the idea that all these holly berries in our backyard, it's like, yeah, are they toxic? It's like,
yeah.
No, they're not unless you have too many of them. So the idea would be, you know, if people are interested in just the health benefits of things that are slightly toxic, like water is toxic. If you drank 5 gallons of water, you probably would die. Because your blood would become so thin, your heart couldn't function because it needs salt.
5 gallons in a day?
No, like all at once.
Like in a minute.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be.
So if you were like,
so everything you put in your mouth is toxic. Everything. And so if the holly berries are toxic, if they are, well then how many would be useful? Because it's a berry, it's fruit, it's healthy, and it's got some kick butt in it, doesn't it? And if you have too many of them, it's a problem. And my point here is the same thing with what we're doing right now with alcohol, which is, you know, you have like a half a beer, it's like, joy time. But you have 7 beers and you're saying things that you shouldn't.
Sick the next day, probably.
Yeah, well, that too, due to dehydration, and all you need to do in that situation is drink a lot of water in order to...
Well, that's another one of those things where you have to build up your tolerance so that you can drink as much as possible.
Well, I think the idea that I'm talking about is not how much alcohol you can consume, but the elation, the neurological elation associated with inhibition, neurological inhibition. So if holly berries, you know, you have 10 berries, and it's like, it gives you like a little bit of a thrill, like a little thrush. That's cool. If your immune system is probably in high gear and good things are happening. Well, the same thing with alcohol because it's a poison. I mean, your whole body just shuts like, oh man, the proteins don't fold correctly. Everything is wrong about it, but we do it anyway, every single day. Right.
You have to drink less than 5 gallons, or take less than 5 gallons to die if you drank like whiskey, you know?
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true. But I think my point is that I'm trying to make, and I'm enjoying the meandering of our conversation, so I don't really care that we don't get there. You know, it's just, consider the idea of going into the realm of the dangerous for the benefit of your own personal health. I mean, I don't hear this in books anywhere, because it's catastrophically dangerous to say that. Because someone's like, oh, I took 20,000 holly berries and I ended up in the hospital, and guess who's getting sued? The person who told me on the radio that I could do this. See, so I mean, I only know that very few people are going to be listening to this, and of course it could go viral, so whatever. But
people hear about the holly berry thing, it's going to go viral.
Yeah, well, but they're going to learn about so many other things. They're going to be knowledgeable and thoughtful, level-headed people, so they would be inoculated in a way that would be useful for them, even though they got some useful information here, unless they snippet it out.
Don't eat holly berries, guys.
Don't do it.
Oh, don't drink alcohol, guys. Is that what you're saying?
Don't drink alcohol either.
Well, what's interesting, though, is I was recently, do you want to say something?
I was just thinking it's almost like or where you just take a little teeny bit of something poisonous and then build up.
Inoculating?
It is an entire science.
Homeopathy. I'm not saying
homeopathic medicine.
Yeah.
Or the opposite. Yeah, yep, and you build up, or else the opposite is...
You build up a reaction to it which fights what ails you.
Initially, yeah. So you're, well, it's your T suppressor cells know that it should suppress the immune system when it senses that allergen present. I mean, so the immunologists kind of know a lot about all the, how this stuff, and it's kind of fascinating. And it really is something that we could all play with if we were educated about it, but we're generally not that much. So we're just sort of like, oh, don't do that, oh, don't do that. But there are realms of immunology, just there are realms of neurology that we just don't know, and we don't care to go there because we're so rigid and we're safe and everything is in boxes because we need command and control from on high. I get that. So I'm just playing with possibilities without mentioning any of that stuff.
Well, the trees are pretty with the berries on it, so you rather, I think you should keep the berries on the trees instead of eating them.
Well, the interesting thing is that there's so much mythology associated with the holly trees because, you know, it's in our Christmas mythology, which goes back to, you know, medieval,
pagan
cultures, pagan cultures. So there's a lot of knowledge about holly berries already out there. It's just that I don't know that I know how to gain access to them
except
digging.
Think they did, but
there's
I really
so
don't
many
know.
Berries on our trees, and I don't think the birds have touched them. So that probably indicates that we should not be eating them.
They take three a day. I've noticed them. They take three. And that's
day.
It.
Okay.
That's their limit. They just kind of know they can't have any more. Well, that brings me up to another topic, which is like just a couple of short while ago, I went over to this place called Copper and Kings. Copper and Kings is a distillery. They take wine, and then they remove all the water, and it's just pure wine alcohol there. And interestingly, not unlike, or maybe unlike, holly berries, you take a little sip, and your whole body just turns warm. I don't know why, but it just like warms everything. It's probably that whole reaction of like, poison, everything's on fire, stop.
And what happened when you took the holly berries?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
So they're not poisonous.
So the Copper and Kings is a distillery. They're all neat. And it does have a butterfly garden there. Did you want to share? Did you want to share some of your enthusiasm? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Well. Okay, Copper and Kings has an awesome monarch butterfly way station. And I don't understand the reason why, but there's something about the butterflies are really important to their industry. So I'm not really sure how that goes together, but anyway, you can actually go there and see it. You don't have to go in to see it because it is accessible from the exterior, even when the place is closed. It's wonderful. They're going to be monarchs, hopefully, all over the place. And today, when I was driving in Okolona, I saw a sign on the highway that said butterfly sanctuary or something, some wording like that, that they did on the highway.
I've seen pollinator zone.
Pollinator zone.
Oh, is that
that's
what
it was.
Okay.
Pollinator zone, yep.
I've seen that in another place.
Pollinator zone habitat or pollinator habitat zone or something.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's the first time I've ever seen that.
Okay.
I think it's Okolona.
And I don't think I was in Okolona, but I've seen something similar somewhere.
Yeah, I was really surprised by it.
Uh-huh.
I was happy.
Is there anything else that you wanted to share about any knowledge you have about Copper and Kings in terms of a reskilling or reusing?
No.
You don't have to, because I have it right in front of me,
okay.
Which is that...
I've heard there's reused old lumber and stuff there to use for furniture.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Oh, yeah,
I've heard that.
Right.
I was there. I just sat on the table and I said, this is a really nice table.
Furniture where weird stuff happens.
What happened is that there's this thing called beams. The beams are no longer beaming vertically. They're just wiped out so they could have an open floor dance space. And they just made it into a table, and they varnished, of course, like crazy.
Also, they took down the top floor, didn't they?
And
it was in pretty bad shape, so they probably...
Well, there is an architect who did all that. Then there's workers who did it. So, I mean, for the interested person, I think we should, you know, anyway, just follow up with the architect and say, hey, let's, you know, put a microphone in front of them, tell them exactly what happened, and then we would know all the different stories.
Oh, that's right. We invited him, didn't we? But he's not here. Too bad.
Well, sometimes with people of architectural standing, you just need to pursue them a little bit more, and then they'll be willing to, because you got to get a large group of people with,
he,
you know.
He probably didn't take us seriously.
At the end of the day, the architect does exist, and there are some definitely reusing of the wood that were that in place that they did.
They reused really cool cans, too. Different colors, orange and green, and they squished them, and then they stapled them onto like a board, and it's like a huge square, and it's like just a work of art. It's just really fantastic.
What kind of art was it? Smiley face?
No, they were just different cans that were like green and orange.
What did the art show? What kind of artistic venue?
It was just a collage can.
A very nice, smooth line, nice looking line, kind of a piece of art. Probably, 8 feet wide, 12 feet high?
It was probably...
4 by 8?
Maybe 10 by 10, something like that.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah. If you want to go to Copperton Kings and see that, you have to go inside, so...
I took pictures of it. It was really cool.
And if you go to Copper and Kings on the internet, you probably can find them on Google Images. At the end of the day, there's some. That's a nice purpose. Doing art with reskilling. do you remember when you brought up Granny Magic? And I did have a Granny Magic thought that I wanted to share too. Granny Magic, of course, is what the Portland Anchor article was back in probably January or maybe December. You know, the whole idea that there's just a whole lot of knowledge in out there, and some people got it, and some people don't even know what that is. So here's the idea of granny magic would be for extremely practical, which everyone can do, which is they can become their own granny magic person, which is if you're interested in getting, I don't know, like healthier, like if you want to start exercising more or eating a lot better, just take a picture or just remember or take a journal of your fingernails. And then in 3 or 4 weeks, take a picture of them again and see if you can see changes in your fingernails. Because a notable way to show that you're unhealthy is to have
ridges and things.
Kind of all kinds of flaky things happening with your fingernails versus, you know, the healthy ones are smooth like a baby. And so one can certainly become a granny magician just by looking at your own life and what are your fingernails
That's
are telling you.
That's what my doctor does. That's the first thing my doctor does. She looks at my fingernails. I never knew what she was doing, that's cool. That's why she does it.
And I would think the same thing would be with toenails, but I'm not sure. You know, when I did a marathon, I lost my toenail.
She does look at feet, too, but it's only because of diabetes, I guess. But
diabetes. Yeah.
But the fingernails, she always looks at the fingernails. That's hard to tell, though, if a woman has their fingernails painted.
Right.
You can't see it with all that enamel and things they put on fingernails these days. Yeah. But yeah, there are times when I eat junk food all the time and I go through binging of junk and then my nails are ridged, like the ridges in my nails, and I was like, oops, I'm starting eating the veggies again.
Well, the secrets are right in front of us is the joy of it. You know, you don't need to go to school, you don't need high tech biomedical apparatuses.
How to watch and feel your body.
If you don't really mind, I'm just going to ask for your reaction to an idea I had, which was that the other day, probably a couple of days ago, I met the mayor and forgot to talk to him about reusing garbage in his goal and what this event is all about that we're doing. Forgot totally. I just wanted to get his picture. That's all I cared about.
Selfish.
And in he happened to be standing in front of a Rainbow Blossom pickup truck that had a bed of dirt and
soil,
and it was going to grow and a movable garden around and inspire people. And I don't know what they do with it, but I just thought that it was kind of a neat model. It's like if you're going to be at Louisville Grow's inaugural open house to their neat building that is, you know, expensive, but at least it'll be a model for the community, not a model, but an icon of, hey, we can, you know, groups that are healthy, loving can, you know, meet there. And then there can be, I think there's a filling station in the back for electric cars. And there's a rain garden, and it goes on and on, of course, stuff like that. But I did just mention, I was looking at the picture of me and the mayor, and I was saying, wow, I wish I had a pickup truck and I could haul that kind of dirt around. You know why? Because people say, I don't want a garden because there's way too much lead in my soil. And if you're a child, yes, be afraid. But if you're an adult, your brain is fully grown and you won't hurt yourself if you have a little bit of lead. Not like a ton of lead, so don't drink 5 gallons of lead.
Melt it down.
But the idea is that I think people don't understand that if you're an adult, you can really handle that. But if you want to just say, no, I want it pure, that's legitimate too. So who would have like a pickup truck to go to Nugent Sand and go get just a pile of dirt and then bring it to the house of the person that wants to be gardening but can't because of the lead, and then just dump it right on their front boulevard, and then they take it from there with their wheelbarrow or their 5 gallon buckets or whatnot.
There are companies and there are people who do that stuff. You just have to go on Craigslist.
You deliver.
Yeah, you get somebody with a truck.
Well, that's kind of
$20.
This is why I wanted to bring it up, and I'm glad that you have some knowledge. So you're saying that is a reasonable thing. So
yeah, people do it all the time.
If people don't have $20, let's just say you don't
free,
have.
Forget
if you don't have, no, we're gonna finish the sentence, aren't we? If you have people that can't see themselves paying $20 for a delivery fee for the dirt, which costs $5 for a scoop. There you go. It's an opportunity for a neighborhood association or Louisville Grows or somebody to pay that fee so that there's still a demand that the people take their shovels and take the dirt from their sidewalk or whatever and get it off there and put it into their wherever they want to. But it's a simple pickup truck from point A to point B. If it costs $20 and no one wants to pay that fee, then all of a sudden someone picks it up and then you're going. Rather than, you know, people year after year saying, oh, I'd like this garden, but I just can't. Like, here's a perfect opportunity. We'll give you, you know, $20 for you to move ahead with this dream that you have. And I just think that that's a great idea. And I just wanted you to just say, yeah, I think it's a great idea too. So would you do that?
Idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if you thought out more, like even if they could coordinate with maybe a neighborhood group that has pickup trucks or something.
Or
even a company that delivers it.
Well, or a neighborhood association could find a vendor that's willing to pay for $20. They just pay the delivery rather than just find some retired person with a pickup truck from the neighborhood association that they're willing to. Because it is, there's a little bit of a risk associated with that, I guess. You know, you could, if it's a beautiful pickup, then you could get it, you know, chinked or something.
You never
like
put
that.
A lot of wood in a beautiful pickup unless you don't want it to be so beautiful.
Which only goes to say that I think old pickups are the way to go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't say enough about that as a possibility. And when they do die, you can just put it in the backyard and fill it with dirt.
Use it as a raised bed.
Yeah. You make sure that you don't put it on the tires on the ground. You know, lift off make sure the tires of the car are on what, cement, gravel, anything that's more permanent, stable, something like that. But then you can just like,
let
it be there.
Yeah, because you have the code official on you about parking the vehicle
yeah.
on the a non-parking
service. Non-parking parking service. But then you get, yeah, you have to be, you know, drain the fluids from it so it doesn't leak out, I guess. Now that's good. So, I mean, this is an idea to be followed up. I don't know that anybody really cares about, you know, of getting dirt, but I do believe that I've heard it before, that they garden, but they have this, like,
I think
lead
that's a
problem.
Great idea. Maybe Louisville Grows would do some scholarships or something, or come up with some funding.
Soil for the people or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, they can bring the garden to the people.
Just small little payment for small tasks, rather than saying, oh, we should fund some staff person. You know, that's just so many thousands of dollars. But this is just one person, $20, you're good for 10 years.
They already have the trucks, perhaps. So maybe they can do something like that for the community.
Well, and it's always better, of course, to eat good food. And you did miss the homegrown tomato song that we did sing at the very beginning. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, growing homegrown tomatoes is, of course, a good idea. But, you know, a corollary to eating healthy, good food grown from your own gardens, going to Kroger and getting some old onions and then getting them for a reduced price, that's cool. But one thing I've been learning, too, is, and then this is kind of a granny magic reskill, but it has much less granny magic, but it's just kind of a technique that everyone can use. And that is, everybody's saying, like, for if you want to do portion size in order to, like, control your weight or just kind of watch what you eat, portion control is done a lot, I've been heard, by using smaller plates. So you psychologically trick yourself into just kind of using the smaller plate so you pick less at it. And at the end of the day, use chopsticks at all times. Chopsticks with soup.
But yeah, it's all perception, I guess. Fool in your mind.
Well, I've been told that, and I've tried to, you know, psychobabble myself into that. And I've gotten to a new level, which is, my portion controller is...
would be me.
Just, if I have two of them, two portion control mechanism, which is the palm of my hand. So if I want to put just a little bit, rather than just saying, I got a cup here, it happens to be in a very large container, so I'm going to fill it up, right? So you put peanuts in there until it gets filled up, like, whoa, peanuts are expensive, they're really, really healthy. Excellent, but you can have way too many of them, and you just spoil yourself.
They're high fat too.
They really cut the appetite down because of their high fat.
Right.
And I'm not saying that that's not a bad thing at all.
It depends.
But
yeah,
if you put just a handful of peanuts into your hand, that's all you get. And then you can put them into any container size of a plate, dish, or anything that you want, because you've now proportioned it, not with some dish or measuring cup that's going to get dirty or something. You just have your hand, and there you go. So that's my new technique that I'm doing. You can do that with oatmeal, same thing. You can
How many handfuls?
Exactly. Well, I, you know, we can use this as a technique.
Whose hand and how many?
Well, a washed hand, right? Wouldn't you want to wash
your
hand?
Own hand, I don't know, unless you're doing something gross.
Yeah, like draining the fluids out of an engine. Then you would want to wash your hands beforehand.
Pretty much.
Okay. Well, if you don't, does anybody have any things that they learned this week, that they the month that they wanted to say? Let's see. I learned that.
I've been reskilling my brain, my brain cells, my memory brain cells.
Reskilling your brain.
Yeah. Because I have to do a lot of reading to learn stuff.
So you're going to get a certification, and you need a certification
by
means
it's
of
like,
passing a test.
I have a lot of crowded stuff in there. I need to empty it out so I can get some space for the new stuff.
Yeah, well.
I'm trying to reacclimate the springtime and this extra light in the evening.
Well, one thing I noticed is that, yeah, acclimation in the evening and all that good stuff. Cool. Well, for me, I was working out at the YMCA, and I wanted to get my heart rate up because I have a heart rate monitor, and so I just worked a little bit faster running than I should have, and I felt a little twinge in my knee, and then my knee was like, oh, gosh. And so what happened then, for a long time, I was I was kind of, I don't know, my knee would pop out of joint because it was just so tight and I just did something. And so now I'm just more careful when I do my jogging. And I just pay attention. If there's something that's a little sharp, then that means that something's probably ripping. So,
yeah.
But if it's achy, then it's just like, welcome to my daily life, right? There's a difference between a sharp and an achy pain. You gotta, I think, reskill yourself into the knowledge and awareness.
Isn't
that
the reason for pain? If it gets bad, you're supposed to stop. Your body's telling you don't do that.
Well, there's lactic acid pain. Lactic acid pain is just your muscles saying, I've just run out of oxygen and I'm now burning and creating acid.
Right, which means you should stop and wait
so
that lactic acid is okay.
No. It just means that you're using your muscle a whole lot and your muscle is sending signals, is getting signals that it's not strong enough, and the lactic acid actually forces your muscles to get stronger. So it's basics. The basic technology of muscle building is to go through the burn. So there's slow achy pain, there's muscle burn from lactic acid, then there's the sharp pain, which is when there's a tendon or something that's causing a little bit dangerous.
Muscle building 101, huh?
You heard it here, but libraries all full of books on that kind of stuff. But speaking of muscles, I wanted to share something that I learned just yesterday, that the YMCA has a new tool. What is it called?
Exercise machine,
and it goes actually side to side like a skater or a skier, rather than just up and down like a stepper. And so that is actually how I've been jogging in order to facilitate strengthening my IT bands, which are the side of your hips. Rather than just straight up. So I think that's kind of neat. I don't know if that's probably pretty much a reskilling. I don't think I'm reusing anything. It's just a reskill, like being knowledgeable about how to do the simple thing, such as jogging. Now, I think we're just wrapping up. We just have a few more minutes, and I'm going to be sharing with you the importance of having very large pieces of wood when you're stoking a fire at night. And I found that I broke my axe because I tried to chop these big knuckles of in between branches, and they don't chop. They just don't break. They just, your axe head gets stuck in there and breaks. So I have been learning that you can just throw the whole kit and caboodle right into the fire, and boy, it's the size of, I don't know, like a basketball, and it burns all night. It just takes forever, and that is not a bad thing, because then you don't have to...
A slow, low burn.
That's good.
Slow, low, because then it'll keep your whole house, your warming area.
If you want a roaring fire that's going to burn hotter than this, it depends on the temperature you want.
Right, right. Now, I would like to get your reaction to this. Mm-hmm. This is a reskill. I'm using my skills with the Army Corps of Engineers. So I just happened to be jogging the other day, ran into a person who was from Army Corps of Engineers running along on the path with a pickup truck, and I stopped them because there was no way they could have gotten past me. And I said, "Hey, I went there and I saw I saw that the people who are clearing the path at the Ohio River have a mountain of wood, big trees and stuff like that. Is it possible that I could get some of those big tree trunks and just, you know, zip them and burn them?" And I haven't heard back yet, but they were going to ask, see whether that's possible. But I do mention it just to say that there's an enormously big pile of wood, and a lot of the thick parts of it are easy to just take to someone's backyard and cut it with a chainsaw or a sawzall, and then chop it with an axe, and then you can burn it, providing that you have a wood-burning stove. But nope, it's probably all going to end up in the landfill. And I don't see that If no one even considered the possibility of using that wood, then I just opened the eyes of the Army Corps of Engineers. Not that they're open, but maybe they were. But the other thing could be that they chipped it. They would just, the whole thing would be chipped, and then they would use that to whatever they do with the wood chips. I mean, what do they do with wood chips?
Spread them on playgrounds, pathways, and they'll decompose more quickly if they're in chips.
In the chips, they'll decompose real quick. Yep, that's right. Yep. Well, I think probably the last thing I want to say today, and I do have, again, 3.5 pages of things that we could talk about, has a lot to do with the idea of where to find a standing desk. So maybe only some people care about the fact that when you're working at a computer, et cetera, that you're sitting down and you're not really using any of your muscles and you're hunched over and you just do that hour after hour. A lot of people are doing that for their jobs, is to kind of stand. And the easiest way, there's thousands of dollars of desks you can get, standing desks and all that stuff. But if you simply take a chair and put it on the table, you've got your standing desk. That's kind of it. And that's not any overhead at all. It's just there. And I kind of realized that, and I think that I wanted to share that. And it's a reskill. You heard it here first. So I would.
What about for a car? Can you get a standing car? So let me drive around all day.
Well,
I can stand in my car.
There's this place called in Great Britain, and in Great Britain they have these things called trolleys and buses. And they did a longevity study of retired people from the trolleys and the buses. And the bus drivers died way earlier than the trolley drivers who stood their whole life. So it makes a difference. And it doesn't have to be just computer users that do it. And it is data out there that can be, not that anybody cares about data, but I mean, it's solid and we can make good policy on that, but I don't know if we will. So anyway, I have this I could talk about, and this and this, but I probably won't. I think we'll just kind of just kind of say sayonara. Yeah, what is that? If you wanted to just bring it up,
it's a headlamp. You strap it to your head when you can't use your hands and you need light.
So it's like the novel kind of flashlight, right? Just put it on your head. And I noticed that this kind is the old kind, which is incandescent. There are now LED ones, which are very low power and high output. So
that's why I figured this was mine, because it's old.
I would suggest that if you do want to get a headlamp, and they're very useful for anything, is to just get an LED. LED is the way to go.
And then you can get a job in a coal mine, too.
Well, I think that is about where we're going to stop. So at the end of the day, reskilling, reusing, metajenny.com/reskill, and you now have been told that you should get a job in a coal mine. But everything else aside, have a good month, and reskill yourself and all that good stuff. All right, bye-bye.